the headlines. The Iranian Navy launches its largest and domestically built military vessel during a maritime missile drop. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says the scandalous fall of Donald Trump as the U.S. president shows that bullying, racism, and lawlessness are doomed to failure. And U.S. officials say National Guard troops deployed to secure the inauguration of Joe Biden as the next president have been allowed to carry weapons. Our top story for this half hour, the Iranian Navy has launched its biggest ever military vessel domestically built for large-scale logistics movements.
Macron Expeditionary Transfer Dock is a valuable floating naval base for expanding and deepening support for the Islamic Republic of Iran's operations at high seas. Building such valuable vessels indicates that Iran's defense industry and factories of the Iranian Navy have successfully bypassed sanctions of the enemy. They manufacture the most effective weapons and equipment, launch them, and make the best use of them for accomplishing missions while the sanctions are at their peak.
The mobile base ship joined the Navy in the presence of Major General Bagheri on the first day of a maritime drill in the Sea of Oman. She's named Macron after a southern Iranian coastal stretch and is capable of carrying five helicopters on her deck. The ship will support Iranian naval fleets in the northern part of the Indian Ocean, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, and the Red Sea. The Iranian Navy also received a missile destroyer called Zereh, meaning armor. The spokesperson for Iran's naval maneuver says the drills are featuring operations by rapid reaction forces, among other things.
We had a rapid reaction by the forces. They entered the area. The region had the area of over 600,000, and we also had land-to-sea missiles being used in the course of the drills. So the naval units, including surface and subsurface units, were deployed to the designated zones, and we are getting prepared to carry out the other stages of the drills. The measures in this stage of the drills have not been pre-planned, and also the joining of the two vessels that, and you have seen them. We had the Zereh missile launcher vessel, and also a new warship that are going to be used in order to support our naval fleet and our intelligence operational units in northern part of the Indian Ocean.
Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says the U.S. is suffering from a major political divide following an attack by President Donald Trump's supporters on Congress.
The American nation is experiencing a major failure in its social and political life, a deep divide inside the country. As we said before, an unlawful person who violates rules in dealing with suppressed and independent nations will one day do the same with his own nation.
Rouhani said the breach of the U.S. Congress was unprecedented. He said the American nation has never imagined that their president would encourage such violence. Rouhani said the scandalous fall of Trump as the U.S. president shows that bullying, racism, and lawlessness are doomed to failure. The Iranian president also said the so-called U.S. maximum pressure campaign against Iran has failed. He said the Iranian people have remained strong despite sanctions and pressure. Rouhani added the country has achieved economic growth in the past months. Political commentator Fouad Izadi says U.S. President Donald Trump's policies have been a total failure both at home and abroad.
The maximum pressure campaign's aim was to overthrow the Iranian government. So if the aim of the Trump administration was to do what John Bolton used to say, that Iran is not going to see the 40th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution anniversary. They have obviously failed. Another failure they have had is that they thought they can get more concessions out of Iran. They thought they can get a deal out of Iran that is going to give them what they want on the nuclear issue and other things. And that idea has also failed. They are not getting a new deal. And so overall, Trump's policies have been a failure, both domestically, internationally, and especially with regard to Iran.
A senior advisor to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the U.S. must lift anti-Iran sanctions if it wants to return to the 2015 nuclear deal. Ali Akbar Velayati said the incoming U.S. administration should make up for past mistakes by removing the sanctions. He said this way the new American administration will prove that it's committed to its obligations under the Iran nuclear deal. Outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew his country from the accord in 2018, reimposing sanctions on Iran. Trump also launched a so-called maximum pressure campaign that has resulted in extra sanctions against Tehran. Iranian officials say the measures are directly targeting ordinary people. Iran's foreign minister says the Islamic Republic will pursue the case of the U.S. assassination of the country's top general, Qasem Soleimani, through courts in Iran and Iraq. Mohammad Javad Zarif also touched upon an arrest warrant issued by an Iraqi court for President Donald Trump for ordering the assassination of senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. He said the verdict was issued in the wake of a follow-up by Iran's foreign ministry. A U.S. drone strike killed General Soleimani and Muhandis near Baghdad airport last January. Iran has requested Interpol to arrest Trump and 47 other American officials identified as playing a role in Soleimani's murder. Israel has launched fresh airstrikes on Syria, targeting the country's eastern parts near the Iraqi border, and several people were wounded in the Israeli strikes. Last week, the Syrian Air Defense reported another Israeli attack on the capital, Damascus. Israel has stepped up its aerial attacks on Syria in the past few months. That is seen as a reaction to the Syrian government's victories against foreign-backed militants. Some of the militant groups are said to be backed by Israel. Damascus has called on the United Nations to take decisive measures to prevent Tel Aviv from repeating similar offenses. The United Arab Emirates flag carrier suspended a Tunisian pilot for refusing to fly a plane to Israel. Tunisian pilot Monem Saheb Al-Taba wrote on his Facebook page that Emirates Airlines suspended him because he refused to fly to Tel Aviv. He's to be introduced to the disciplinary committee. Arab activists condemned the suspension and praised Al-Taba for his, quote, heroic stance and refusal to recognize the Israeli regime. Back in September, Israeli Airlines began operating direct flights between Tel Aviv and Dubai after the UAE signed an agreement to normalize diplomatic relations with Israel. Many countries and Palestinians have condemned the normalization deal between Abu Dhabi and Tel Aviv. U.S. National Guard troops deployed on the streets of the capital, Washington, D.C., have been allowed to carry weapons. The Guard soldiers were also authorized to make arrests if the situation got out of hand. That's according to the Pentagon National Guard Bureau Chief. Daniel Hokanson, however, said it would be a last resort. U.S. officials are boosting security ahead of the inauguration of Joe Biden as president on January the 20th. It comes in the wake of the last week breach of Congress by supporters of President Donald Trump. Five people were killed as a result. The FBI has warned of armed protests at all 50 state capitals and in Washington before Inauguration Day. The U.S. House of Representatives has approved a resolution that urges Vice President Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove President Donald Trump from office.
On this vote, the yeas are 223, the nays are 205. The resolution is adopted.
The measure was passed with a final vote of 223 to 205. Pence was said he would not invoke the 25th Amendment. He has said that the move is not in the best interests of the nation. House Democrats say they will vote on Trump's impeachment on Thursday if the article is not invoked. The impeachment would address charges of inciting insurrection after Trump supporters attacked the U.S. Capitol last Wednesday. With that, Trump would be the first president in U.S. history to face impeachment twice. He was downplayed the risk of being removed from office.
And I'd like to say that free speech is under assault like never before. The 25th Amendment is of zero risk to me, but will come back to haunt Joe Biden and the Biden administration. As the expression goes, be careful what you wish for.
Trump also called the Democratic-led efforts to bring impeachment charges against him a witch hunt, a phrase he had repeatedly used during his first impeachment. Earlier, he described the initiative by the Democrats as a dangerous move. The developments come as Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has reportedly said the president has committed impeachable offenses. Several House Republicans have also voiced support for the impeachment. International lawyer Edward Corrigan says the U.S. House will definitely pass the impeachment vote against President Trump.
Well, I think the impeachment vote will definitely pass at the House of Representatives because the Democrats have a narrow majority there, but there's an indication of a number of Republicans that are going to join them. Mm. The Senate, the Republicans still have a majority until there's the transfer of power on January 20th, and then it'll be tied, and then Vice President will have the tie-breaking vote. Mm. But there's some people, one senator for Alaska, Lisa McCroskey, said that she doesn't see herself as a Republican under the Trump administration. And Trump really has a cult, and he has done a tremendous amount of damage. And he's trying to just, you know, sort of have a total reign of destruction for the last couple of weeks of his power. And this is unprecedented. People were afraid that Richard Nixon might break before he resigned with the impeachment thing with Watergate and whatever.
Right.
But he did resign. He was pressured into that. Mm-hmm. But people were afraid that he was becoming mentally unstable. And I think the same concerns actually are even larger with Donald Trump.
Russia says it will complete its multi-billion-dollar Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline to Germany despite pressure from the United States. Russian media cited a foreign ministry official as saying that the completion of the project depends on various factors, including weather. The pipeline, which will take Russian gas directly to Germany, is already more than 90% done. The project has sparked fresh tensions between Washington and Moscow, as the U.S. claims it increases Europe's reliance on Russia, but the Kremlin insists Nord Stream 2 is merely commercial. The White House has imposed many rounds of sanctions on companies involved in the venture. U.S. media reports suggest the administration of outgoing President Donald Trump will target more companies involved in Nord Stream 2 in the coming days. Daily COVID-19 deaths in the United States have hit a new record, with nearly 4,500 fatalities. According to data released by Johns Hopkins University, cumulative deaths in the world's worst-hit country have now surpassed 380,000. The average number of daily deaths in the past week has now surpassed the fatalities of the 9/11 attack. The U.S. has also, so far, registered more than 22.8 million cases of the virus. Over the past week, an average of nearly 249,000 new COVID-19 infections was reported every day. Vaccination is also underway in the country, but the government has come under criticism for the program's slow and chaotic process. COVID-19 vaccine jointly produced by American drug maker Pfizer and its German partner, BioNTech, has seemingly failed to protect people, as many across the world are experiencing allergic reactions to the inoculation. However, the U.S. is not the only country striving to find a cure to the pandemic. Despite Washington's eagerness to keep its dominance on even the basic medical needs of the people, sanctioned hit Iran has come up with its own vaccine.
As the coronavirus pandemic continues to wreak havoc across the globe, a number of pharmaceutical companies have come up with vaccines to curb the deadly disease. That includes America's Pfizer and Moderna, with both manufacturing billions of doses and claiming the success rate of their vaccine over 90% to protect people from being infected. Many countries around the world signed mega contracts with these two drug makers, while many others, including the US, the UK, Bulgaria, and Portugal, started the mass vaccination to their populations. But reports coming out of these countries indicate Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines have so far failed to secure people against COVID-19. From Britain's National Health Service staff to health workers in Portugal, as well as other ordinary people in numerous nations, many have suffered allergic reactions, including mild or moderate side effects, after the Pfizer vaccine rollout. Some others have even suffered life-threatening reactions after receiving the first dose. This has been to the extent that several health regulators were forced to issue stern warnings, saying those with a history of significant allergic reactions should not currently receive the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine. Observers believe the American vaccines are not a safe and effective option to deal with the deadly disease.
Based on the mixed track record so far of both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines, it's not clear the extent to which, if at all, that these vaccines have been successful in protecting people's lives. What is clear is that the United States government has once again been successful in protecting corporate profit, in this case, the profit of the pharmaceutical industries, which it demonstrates once again to be more important to it than human life, unfortunately.
Given the failure of such companies and their products in saving people's lives, questions arise as to why the United States and other Western countries limit their funds to developing the inoculation to only a few firms, namely Pfizer and Moderna.
And that's a wrap for now, by the way.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
A growing sea of bloggers, podcasters, message board moderators, conspiracy theorists, social media pundits, extremist preachers, and news outlets feed off Trump directly, using the president's lies and latest tweets to garner likes, hits, donations, and ad revenue. To gain followers, they repost trending conspiracies loved by Trump fans on social media and attack racial justice activists whose calls for social change generate resentment on the right. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Mike Ludwig Ryder. This article is published under the heading, "The Trumps Have Fueled a Far-Right Media Monster That Is Not Going Away." Here's the details. On January 3rd, just 3 days before President Trump incited and cajoled the predominantly white mob that invaded Congress, Donald Trump Jr. retweeted a video of a scuffle between police and residents of Gatineau, Quebec, who were holding a private gathering in violation of local pandemic restrictions. Cops and residents blamed each other for the altercation, but regardless of the details, the president's oldest son and potential political heir warned, "This insanity is coming here if you don't wake the hell up." Trump Jr.'s tweet was then retweeted by Ashley Babbitt, the woman who was shot dead by police on Wednesday, January 6, after storming the Capitol building with violent extremists and angry Trump fans. "Nothing will stop us," Babbitt tweeted the day before her death, warning that the storm was descending on Washington, D.C. Babbitt is now a martyr on far-right message boards, very racist, obese, about avenging the death of a white woman. The video Trump Jr. retweeted was posted by a Canadian far-right journalist who recently asserted that Black Lives Matter is sponsored by Nike, CNN, and many mayors and local police departments. In reality, Black Lives Matter is the banner for a broad movement, as well as an umbrella for a range of organizations. It is not a single organization, let alone one with corporate sponsors. It is a movement directly in opposition to police departments, and of course, police in many U.S. cities violently cracked down on protests for racial justice last summer. However, on Trump Jr.'s Twitter feed, reality takes a backseat to red meat. A day before the assault on the Capitol, Trump Jr. urged Republicans voting in Georgia Senate runoffs to save America as you know it from the communists. That statement feeds false conspiracy narratives about congressional Democrats that drove Trump fans to violence. Narratives about a hostile takeover of the country are also a fundamental to the white nationalist thinking that has gained traction on the right on Trump, who tweeted, "We love you," to his supporters after his lies about the election convinced them to trash the Capitol. White supremacist hate groups often justify their violent ideologies under the guise of love. Love for their families, for their communities, for their nation, which are perceived to be under existential threat by encroaching others, said Margaret Wong, president of the Southern Poverty Law Center Action Fund, in a statement after the Capitol breach. The two Democrats who prevailed in Georgia runoffs and others in the Senate are not authoritarian communists, of course, but this and other false narratives can be found supplanting facts across the right-wing media universe. A growing sea of bloggers, podcasters, message board moderators, conspiracy theorists, social media pundits, extremist preachers, and news outlets feed off Trump directly, using the president's lies, and until this week, latest tweets to garner likes, hits, donations, and ad revenue. To gain followers, they repost trending conspiracies loved by Trump fans on social media and attack racial justice activists whose calls for social change generate resentment on the right. The relationship is symbiotic. Trump constantly paints the mainstream and left-leaning media as illegitimate, boosting demand for conspirational right-wing alternatives that recycle Trump's lies into content and affirm his followers' beliefs. The Trump family and its right-wing celebrity allies then use the far-right to bypass the rest of the media and feed conspiracy theories to millions of people. None of this is new. Trump has attacked the media for years, and the disinformation he spread about the COVID-19 pandemic provided a preview of the contested election. With the president's election challenges thrown out of course, and more recently, some Republican leaders turning against his effort, far-right media became Trump's sharpest tool for undermining the election he lost. A poll in late December found that 68% of Republicans believe the November election was not free and fair, and 36% say Trump should not concede, no matter what, even if he is unable to present evidence of widespread voter fraud. It doesn't matter that the supposed evidence did not hold up in the court. More than half of Republicans said the courts are biased against Trump, even though the president appointed some of the judges who threw out his campaign's lawsuits. The Trumps, along with right-wing pundits and conspiracy hucksters, have convinced a large share of the electorate that anything defying their narratives is a lie told by Democrats, the media, or the deep state. Those who follow the right-wing media saw plenty of warning signs ahead of the violence in Washington, D.C. Between January 1st and January 4th, posts with calls for violence were found on Parler, Twitter, TikTok, and the pro-Trump message board, The Donner, according to analysis by Right-Wing Watch. Posts calling for violence, including the arrest and execution of politicians, on The Donner alone received 40,000 engagements. Some of the calls for violence are linked to the QAnon conspiracy theory, which holds that Democrats are an elite, cabal, satanic pedophiles, among other bizarre beliefs. On January 6th, an armed ultra-nationalist with zip-tie handcuffs was photographed storming congressional chambers. In the days before the violence at Capitol, organizers of the Stop the Steal rally took to social media and various far-right outlets to argue that Democrats had stolen the election. They also increasingly mentioned civil war while attacking anti-fascist and Black Lives Matter activists, according to Right-Wing Watch. Pro-Trump attorney Lynn Wood was simultaneously spreading QAnon lies about child rapists and calling for Vice President Mike Pence to be arrested and executed for his disloyalty to Trump. The memes of nooses made the rounds, and a hangman's gallows was erected outside the Capitol during the mob attack. Wood also represents Kyle Rittenhouse, who became a right-wing hero after shooting three people at a Black Lives Matter protest in Kenosha, Wisconsin. With Trump unwilling to concede the election and coddling his supporters who attacked Congress, Facebook suspended the president's account for an indefinite period of time. On Friday afternoon, Twitter finally kicked Trump off for good. As of this writing, Wood's Twitter account is suspended as well. Their post crossed a clear line with a speech that led to harm. However, Trump is not the only one in his orbit whose public statements foment hate and violence. Should Trump Jr.'s account be suspended? What about Rudy Giuliani, who used Twitter to peddle false conspiracy theories about a stolen election before urging Stop the Steal protesters to hold a trial by combat at the Capitol? While both Trump Jr. and Giuliani asked the Trump loyalists to remain peaceful after the violence erupted, it was the widespread belief among Trump supporters that the election, if not their perceived white Christian way of life, is being stolen from them that sparked the violence. When Facebook removed hundreds of QAnon groups and accounts for right-wing militias that glorify violence, the company also shut down left-wing pages, potentially to dodge accusations of ideological prejudice. While the anarchists and anti-fascists who lost their pages have a radical perspective, they were not spreading hate or disinformation, and they argued that Facebook had effectively equated anti-fascist and anti-racist organizing with dangerous conspiracies and white nationalist militias. as the anarchist at Crime Ethnic wrote, suppressing the voices of those who seek to protect their communities from institutional and white supremacist violence is an intentional decision to normalize violence as long as the ones employing it hold institutional power. The right-wing media universe that helped Trump foment the violence we witnessed recently will not disappear when the president leaves the White House. In fact, Trump, his family, and his remaining allies will likely rely on far-right media to stay relevant until the next campaign season. New ultra-right stars will likely be born online and ride Trump's catalysts, as did the two QAnon proponents who were recently elected to Congress. The Proud Boys and white nationalist groups will likely continue using conspiracies and far-right media as recruiting tools, and anti-fascists will continue confronting them online and in the streets. However, after the attack on Capitol and the suspension of Trump's social media accounts, the far-right media may become increasingly isolated, as Democrats and even some Republican leaders call for Trump's early removal from office. However, even within its own bubble, the force and power of far-right media must not be underestimated. After all, it play a seismic role in paving the way for Trump's presidency.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the programs To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother, I'm Muhammad. And today, I'm going to read to you an aphorism of Imam Ali from Nahjul Balagha. Before that, let's go ahead and listen to the Arabic words, and after that, I'm going to read you the English translation. Stay with us.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام إن لله في كل نعمة حقا فمن أداه زاده منها ومن قصر فيه خاطر بزوال نعمته.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam said, "Surely in every blessing there is the right of Allah. If one discharges that right, Allah increases the blessing. And if one falls short of doing so, one stands in danger of losing the blessing."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Now, one of the very beautiful things and profound things which we learn from Imam Ali alayhi salam is this concept that certain people who are worthy of special and unique knowledge are endowed and bestowed with this unique knowledge by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, one of the people, of course, who we see was endowed with this kind of knowledge of the unseen, ilm al-ghayb, and this knowledge of things that are to happen, of course, is Imam Ali alayhi salam. Now, regarding this idea, there is a tradition, a hadith, a narration, reported by Juwayriya ibn Ma'ashar Abdi, who, by the way, was also foretold by Imam Ali about the way he was to be martyred, and in fact, that is the way that he was martyred. And so this tradition by Juwayriya ibn Ma'ashar Abdi, he relates from Imam Ali alayhi salam regarding Imam Hussein. Juwayriya reports, when I was accompanying Imam Ali on the way to Siffin, the battle of Siffin, this was the battle against Muawiyah, when we reached the highlands of Karbala, Imam Ali stood in a corner of the army camp, looking right and left. He started weeping. Then he said, "By Allah, this is their landing place where they will be killed." And so someone asked Imam Ali, "O Amir al-Mu'mineen, O Commander of the Believers, O Prince of the Believers, what is the name of this land?" Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "This is the land of Karbala and the place of martyrdom of a group who will go to paradise without reckoning, without questioning." People did not understand what Imam Ali meant until Imam Hussein alayhi salam, peace and blessings upon him, and his companions were martyred in the land of Karbala years later. Dear friends, again we find this intricate and profound lesson that if we are to follow someone, if we are to be the followers, the pupils, the students, the lovers, the ashiq of a person, let it be a person who is so close to Allah, the Almighty, the Exalted, that they have been given divine knowledge by Allah. And again, we find here that the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and so yet another profound lesson from Imam Ali alayhi salam, follow those who have a unique position, not in the eyes of society, but in the eyes of Allah. A profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil. For protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, "Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger."
And
and I ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks, so they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. Ask you for protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
We invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
Every name from the Islamic perspective has two definitions. One is a theological definition and one is a moral definition. When we say Muslim, who is a Muslim? Anyone who says the kalimatain, La ilaha illallah, Muhammadun Rasulullah, is a Muslim. That is a given, unanimously accepted by Shias and Sunnis alike. We don't see what is in his heart. Whoever says those words, he or she has to be accepted as a Muslim. Of course, Islam is only good to this for this dunya. The person becomes Muslim, he is spark for us, the relationships of marriage would be okay, and we have to treat him. Things which are wajib on others will be wajib on that person. Things which are haram would be haram on that person. Islam is only a matter of dunya. When you talk about Jannat, it's not Islam. It is Iman. We'll come to that later on. So the theological definition of the name Muslim, anyone who says La ilaha illallah Muhammadun Rasulullah is a Muslim. His life, his honor, and his property is now sacrosanct. But then there is another definition given in our books and Sunni books, unanimously, by Rasulullah of a Muslim on a moral level. Where he says, Al-Muslimu man salima an-nas min lisanihi wa yadihi. And this is a narration from Miqdad bin Amr. Where he says to Rasulullah, Ya Rasulullah, you just come from a battle. أَرَأَيْتُ رَجُلًا ضَرَبَنِي بِالسَّيْفِ فَقَطَعَ يَدِي ثُمَّ لَاذَ مِنِّي بِشَجَرَةٍ. Hypothetical situation he is asking to Rasulullah, that what do you say about a person that we were in the battle in jihad and he hits me with his sword and cuts my arm, but I'm still fighting against him, and when I was soon to overcome him, he went and hid behind a tree. And when I got close, قَالَ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ مُحَمَّدٌ رَسُولُ اللَّهُ. When I got close to him, when I was going to now overcome him, he recited the kalima. أَأَقْتُلُهُ. This was the hypothetical question Miqdad has from Rasulullah. Do I have a right to kill him? Do you think his kalima was sincere? He just cut the arm of a Muslim. Now that he is going to be overcome and defeated, he says the kalima. And Rasulullah is being asked, should I kill him? Rasul said, La. فَعِدْتُ مَرَّتَيْنَ أَوْ ثَلَاثَ. Miqdad says, I repeated this question 2-3 times. All 3 times Rasulullah says no. And then 3rd time Rasulullah says, if you do that, he will be on your status and you will be on his status. Means the life of a Muslim becomes muhtaram, sacrosanct, when a person utters the kalima. Whether it is there in his heart, that's not our business. We don't have the ability to know that.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kHz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. There is a very profound, beautiful tradition that I once came across, and it is worthy of me of sharing this with you, my dear brothers and sisters. When I read this tradition personally, a lot of changes occurred in my worldview, in my thought. And we see that Islam, especially the Imams, are so merciful, are so inclusive, that they are not just willing to throw people into They're not just willing to throw people into the fire of hell. Rather, they wish to save everybody. And everybody who they can save, they want to save. Their duty and their responsibility was to save people, to guide people, to bring people to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And they will feel hurt, and they will feel that they did not do their responsibility well enough if they see that people are being flung into the fire of hell. This tradition of Imam Ali alayhi salam is something that is worthy of reflection, worthy of note. And we'll mention it, and you know, brothers and sisters can ponder upon it. It's a very beautiful tradition. The Imam is reported to have said that paradise has 8 doors. A door through which the prophets and the truthful ones will enter. There's a specific door for a specific group of people. That this door is only for them. A door through which the martyrs and the righteous will enter. There's another door. So now we have 2 doors already allocated. 5 doors now, the Imam says. Sometimes this makes it 7. 5 doors through which our Shia and our lovers will enter. And the Imam continues and says that I will stand on the Sirat, on that path, and to ensure that all of my Shia are taken through one of these 5 doors. And then the Imams, alayhi salam, look at the beauty of these words here. This is something that we all should ponder upon, my dear brothers and sisters. This is something that we should teach. This is something that we should, you know, inculcate, and rather let these words of the Imam penetrate our hearts to show the mercy and the inclusiveness of Islam and the Imam alayhi salam. And the Imams rather, not only the Imams alayhi salam. Then Imam says the last door, the 8th door, is a door through which the rest of the Muslims will enter. That is those that bear witness to La ilaha illallah, that there is no God but Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But there's a condition, the Imam says, and those who do not bear an atom's weight of hatred and enmity towards us, the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. The hadith does not say that this door is for those who are Shia. The Shias have their 5 doors. This is for those Muslims who do not hate the Ahlul Bayt. The hadith doesn't say, it does not also does not say love the Ahlul Bayt, and they do not hate the Ahlul Bayt. Most likely those who do not hate and love the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to be of those who entered through the first 2 doors, inshaAllah. To be of the righteous, to be of the truthful, inshaAllah. And not to be of those who are pulled out of the fire by Amir al-Mu'mineen. Even though that is something beneficial, but it's not something that will be of, you know, honor for the Imam, alayhi salam. InshaAllah, until next time, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
The debate.